Okay.
Hello and
welcome to the... Okay, sorry, you go.
I'll start.
Hello and welcome.
Oh my God. This is...
Why is that
wildly unprofessional?
You knew that was coming. That's what she said.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company.
Wow.
Show
four things. Hello, everybody.
I missed it by like 3 seconds. All right, sorry. We're done. My bad.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host, and next summer I'll be six, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, hot tie guy.
Nice. And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
I hate disappointing just one person. And I really hate disappointing everyone. But I love Burlington Coat Factory. You go in there for $645, you are literally a king.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week after our main topic, we'll go to the conference room for a mini segment and then finish up with some trivia as usual. This week we'll be discussing The Surplus, Season 5, Episode 10, written by Lee Eisenberg. I'm going to take this again. I'm sorry.
Nah. Uh-uh. Leaving this.
All right. Well, I'm going to say it again then. The Surplus, Season 5, Episode 10, written by Lee Eisenberg and Gene Stupnitsky, directed by Paul Feig, and aired on December 4th, 2008.
Ah, what a time.
Yeah.
The Surplus, we're doing this episode here. Edwin, why are we doing The Surplus
so
today, dude?
So, in thinking about... our last few episodes in the Alliance and in the Michael and Dwight episodes that we've aired recently, there's been this dynamic of Michael kind of being, as the manager, kind of talking down to his employees or being a little bit on another level from his employees, or being on a separate level from Dwight, for example, that sort of power dynamic between a boss and his employees, or a manager and their employees. In this episode, we see that play out again, but Michael is so eager to get everyone's approval. And there is that dynamic of him being the manager, the person who has to make decisions is separate from what the group wants. They're looking to him to make the decision. So just playing with that dynamic again, this seemed like a good episode to look into.
I swallowed all your ideas. I'm going to digest them and see what comes out the other end.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, I'm just pooping. You know how I be.
It's a very good 1-2 punch.
It's a number two punch is what it is. Whoa. I think these two... So it's The Surplus is an episode that... it's kind of near the middle of season five. Like, when I get to that episode, I'm usually cruising for a bruising. Mm-hmm. And it comes and goes, and I'm like, oh, that's a good episode. But when I just... remove it from the context of season five, because season five's got a, you know, the whole Michael Scott Paper Company arc comes after. There's a lot going on in season five, and this is such a beautiful gem of an episode. And really diving deep into it, I was just taken with how well structured it is, how refreshing it is. Of like, it feels like a season one episode in the middle of season five. And the stakes feel low but high at the same time, which is the best Office thing going on, where it's like, at the end of the day, no one's going to get real hurt. Nothing is really at stake here other than Michael's own feelings. And it's just an incredible episode. Really loved it.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, the main storyline kind of stands alone outside of like the season arc, you know. I think really the only what I would call the C storyline is Dwight and Angela and Andy. Angela and Andy visiting Shroot Farms to tour it as a wedding venue.
You're putting that as a C
story. Yeah, I'm kind of interested. Yeah.
What's your A and B, Buster?
What's your game, friendo?
I guess you
could. Where do you get off?
What gives you the right?
What gives you the right?
What?
Who do you think you are?
Who?
Okay.
Who do you think you are?
I do. I think of Dwight and Angela and Andy as a C storyline here. I guess I was combining. It's tough because I think of Michael versus everyone as an A storyline. Michael having to make the tough decision, that is a lose-lose for him, of whether to get chairs or copier or take the money for himself. And then the B storyline being Jim and Pam.
Oh, interesting.
How do you see it? What do you think?
The A storyline is deciding what to do with the surplus,
mm-hmm.
right? Jim and Pam is really just like that storyline is a part of that.
Yeah, it's baked
like,
in.
It's a light rivalry. It's a subplot line within the larger one. Versus to me, I'd say the Dwight, Angela, Andy storyline is a solid B storyline that exists outside of the office, completely separate. And then
if you were to write a log line for this episode, like a 2-sentence description, you would say Michael needs to decide how to use an office surplus without making everyone mad. Dwight, Angela, and Andy tour Shroot Farms as a wedding venue. That would be your 2-sentence. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. Okay. Yeah, Sean.
Okay. All right, fine. Fine.
Okay.
Thank you, doctor. Take 2 days and call me in the morning.
What the D storyline would be Michael versus the chocolate powder on the tiramisu, I think.
Yeah.
I'm happy to start with that scene because, God, there's two moments in this episode that got me doubled over laughing. And that one is it because I can't even think about
it. It's so funny.
The timing with which he takes his second bite as he starts to explain again, and it happens again. And David Walsh is like, is that why you're calling me? I don't know, man. That one, it just killed me how long that takes to happen to have just that little phone call. And
that he would eat it while he was calling David Wallace. You couldn't do those things in separate orders.
And he goes back for more after he finally clears
while he's calling to ask David Wallace to take like make the tough decision and take the heat off of him.
I this just reminds me that we need to do a phone call draft one time of just best phone calls on the show.
Ooh, very nice.
Because there's so many.
That's a good one.
That's a gold ticket idea.
Yeah, we should do that. And then the other one is just the little shot of Stanley when Hank says not much lumbar support and just the look that Stanley gives the camera. It caught me by surprise and I audibly went and I just started laughing so hard. This episode is really good.
The tiramisu joke is so funny. First of all, for Steve Carell's performance, you know, he's faking it, but it is like so realistic, his reaction to inhaling the chocolate powder. And then, I just want to know, like, I was just listening to Brian Baumgartner's oral history of The Office, and they were talking about, I think it was Lee Eisenberg, who co-wrote this episode, was talking about how they have a lot of things that happen in the writer's room that end up in the show. Like, Call of Duty was a writer's room thing. All the writers used to play Call of Duty at the same time in the office. I just wonder if somebody ordered tiramisu the day that they were pitching ideas about this. And that kept happening.
This is only kind of related, but on the Conan podcast, the Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend podcast, one time they told a story about Greg Daniels giving up sugar, so he used to just buy pies and smell them.
That is psychotic. That is crazy.
Wow. But I agree with you on...
I saw a little taste of it.
That's good.
I agree with you on Steve Carell / Michael Scott. Anytime that Michael Scott is out of breath, it's a hilarious moment.
Yes.
He delivers so many comedic blows by being out of breath.
Kevin sitting on him.
It's like, yeah.
When they walk into this episode and he is laughing.
Yeah. I've decided as I do these to start collecting more Michael guttural noises.
You got to.
And have a whole beautiful palette.
When he says, I had so much egg on my face. When he says that moment, he's out of breath. So.
Yes.
And when he said shut it under his breath, shut. Yeah. Always, always good. Hilarious.
But yes, back to the A story.
Yeah, let's start. Okay, let's kind of start at the beginning with Michael and Oscar. I love Oscar as the sort of teaching figure for Michael. He enters asking for this decision and kind of you know that Oscar is kind of planning to set up the suggestion of the copier, but he ends up having to explain the entire notion of a surplus to Michael, and then it gets brought out to the larger group for them to discuss.
Yeah.
There's the X-axis.
Nice. That cold open is one of my favorites of all time, I think, and just a great moment between Oscar and Michael. Anytime the two of them are discussing adult subjects like surpluses or finances in general.
And this scary bar is stuff that no one ever needs.
Exactly.
Yeah. I present to you the rational consumer, as it were.
I do enjoy these moments when Oscar a little, his acting is great because he is relishing it a little bit. Like he gets a little bit of joy of like being the one who knows.
He's a good teacher in this moment.
He's a very good teacher. He knows Michael so well. And when Michael backtracks from age 8 to age 5, he's ready with the lemonade stand. That's a perfect analogy. And Michael really gets it, and he wants to, and like he refers to the company as mommy and daddy, and he brings the dollar amount to $10, and he makes it very Michael friendly, in a way that he understands.
And then they flip it to with Hank, where Michael starts to explain it to Hank. He says, "I know what a surplus is.
I know what a surplus is."
And then, I mean, to kind of again talk about using very easy math for Michael, you know, the 15% rule with commission and how he gets Michael to kind of show his hand that he knows.
Why did you say dollars?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know. Seems like you know.
And the way when he finally points Michael out, he literally points him out. The way Oscar stands and points at Michael of like, he knows.
Yeah.
He knows.
He like he's does take the a bonus. Step.
It's a step in point. It's such a tattletale move from like kindergarten. It's so funny that he's like explaining to me like I'm 5, and then Oscar acts like he's 5 later when he's like, he knows he's gonna screw us over. Great stuff.
It is, and then we get the office dividing, and Michael says, "Oh, so teams are forming." Pam very quickly creates team chair, and the office is divided about whether or not they should go for a copier or the chair.
Very important point, which is that this sort of situation Michael finds himself in, which he almost feels like he's the malicious figure. It's this episode begins. He's very open. He's like, great, copier. I can do that. Everyone cool with that?
Yeah.
And then there's disagreement and he's like, okay, so chairs instead. And then Oscar comes back at him. And so the solution Michael ends up at of like, hey, how about you guys decide and you tell me or I'm taking the bonus, is actually the best option because that's how it starts, is the two sides. Like, Michael's willing to just go with Oscar and then willing to go with Pam. Mm-hmm. And so it should never have really been foisted upon Michael in the first place.
I'm thinking...
I don't think it actually is his decision to make.
No, I agree. That he does kind of make the call. That seems like a very good move. You decide amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
And then he'll make he'll go with that. I mean, I know that I talked about our episode about the Alliance, but in that episode, when they get the mint chocolate chip cake for Meredith, Michael gets it because that's what he wants, and that's it. And Pam tries to appeal to him that to get something maybe that Meredith can enjoy or that everyone can enjoy. Mint chocolate chip. And that's the end of the discussion. So in this moment, Michael is trying to do what everyone wants. He is trying to build consensus, and he wants to be part of the group, which is so interesting because in different moments in the show, he is outside of the group. in email surveillance when he's trying to go to Jim's party, or just any moment like that when he wants to be friends with everyone. And then what happens as they're all trying to appeal to Michael to get him to decide the way that he wants. The office kind of becomes this version of heaven for Michael, where everyone is so nice to him, and he's having a great time, and he's going
that
out to lunch with everybody.
That one shot where he's like high-fiving people, and Stanley's opening the door for him.
Follows him out of the annex, and
it's so good.
It's a precursor to the cold open of Nepotism with the lip sync, almost, where you get this single tracking shot of Michael's greatest day in the office from like back in the break room all the way to his, it's great. It's a lovely shot. Michael is on cloud nine. Everything he dreams about is coming true. He goes out to lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Jim and Oscar, and their best day ever. They're high-fiving.
Good friends, good times, good fun.
The way that Jim pops in on that, like, oh, wait, you guys going to lunch?
You guys going to lunch?
Can I come?
Yeah, come on.
And in this perfect scenario for Michael, Toby is very strategically removed very early on.
Yes.
He can't ruin anything because he speaks up and, you know, Michael says, you are the silent killer. Why don't you go back to the annex? That's the moment, too, that people will point at as evidence for Toby being the Scranton Strangler.
Exhibit A, he says. You'll see.
Yeah.
And the camera does seem to linger on him more intentionally than you'd think.
But that's even in his perfect shot when Michael is walking all the way back to his office, Toby isn't really a part of it. You feel like in another episode...
We see him being sad
on the way. Yes, that's what I mean. In another episode, you feel like... or you could see a version of this where Toby is there and just kind of takes the air out of Michael's sails. Like walking in with a bow tie and a stack of teacups.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's why people are leaving.
No one wants to work here. Oh, boy. We just went two different directions on that quote. We just went...
It's okay.
I went one way, you went another.
It's okay.
Who knows? We'll leave it up to the audience. So the structure of this whole choice is... This is why the writing is so good on this episode, because there are these three storylines, but just as strongly it felt to me that there's three acts to this. And this is a lot of
people write screenwriting.
Yeah, you write things in acts,
standard,
right?
Yeah.
And when I looked at... I just only bring this up because when I looked at the moment Michael has the call with David Wallace and realizes he can get the bonus is like exactly 2/3 of the way through the episode. Like it is exactly at that third act mark when he goes, oh, wait a minute, there's a third option. And it adds this whole other layer. This is the none of the above multiple choice question that's messing Michael up, where he's like, oh, I love coats. he reacts to $645 like there's another zero.
He's
unbelievable.
He says, I already have $645. Sort of.
Yes.
I don't know how.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is wine. I already have wine.
I think he's still recovering from his debt with Jan at this point. But,
of course.
Hence the credit. I don't know how he got a credit line at Burlington, I guess. It's a brilliant choice because they're preying on Michael's selfishness. Like you see the mint chocolate chip type thing where it's like, oh, wait, you can completely do something else here. And he actually ends up with maybe the most mature way to use that information. He kind of stumbles into it of saying, you figure out or I'm taking the bonus. And he doesn't really try to necessarily hide from it for that long, which is not like Michael.
There are a handful of other moments like this. For example, when they ask Michael what toppings to get, and he says, I don't know, Pam, what toppings do you like? And she's so surprised, and under her breath, she says, hot fudge. Yeah. It makes me think, I agree that Michael does eventually come to a good decision, even though he's already made the wrong one by buying the coat, because at some point he has to buy the coat.
I mean, yeah.
But the idea of putting it back to his workers to decide, everyone on the staff to decide how to make the decision. But he also could have taken the money and somehow like thrown a party or something. Don't you think there's another way that he could have
still
utilized that money
over
for the good of everyone?
True.
He really
wants the
coat,
though. If he takes
the
money, he's lowering their amount from, $4,300 down to $640.
It's kind of like the bonus in the Christmas party episode that he takes and buys the iPod for Ryan. Yes. You would have thought that he could have gotten maybe some other...
He could have bought Ryan another iPod.
He could have bought... Ryan, who is not in this episode.
Or an iPhone, who had just come out. Yeah, where was Ryan?
I was thinking that in Christmas Party, it'd be... Like, what other... Like, mid-2000s appropriate gift could Michael have gotten for everyone? Maybe a bunch of Zunes. Or, hey, some Prism Duro Sports. You've seen one of these?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sorry, I said, where was Ryan? Ryan's at the bowling alley this whole time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
He's not getting back in the fold yet. Yeah. But it is an interesting thing. This might transition to the other storyline, but like not having Dwight and Andy, who I think would be pretty big voices in this episode, it's good true. That they're not there, because they, you know, I think Oscar and we get a little more Hank, a little more Oscar. Like if Dwight is there, I feel like this is an entirely different episode. Yeah, absolutely steamrolls. He probably would have had a different idea altogether. Just like Toby, who was like, we need to have the air quality tested. Which does that cost? I don't know if that costs $650 to get your air quality tested.
Yeah.
I guess he buys the radon kits later. Yeah. So.
Or like maybe
the radon test kit.
Or like I could also see Dwight like being on to everyone being nice to Michael, but it takes him a little bit to figure it out. Like, Michael, they're trying to...
they're trying to trick you. They're trying to deceive you.
We also saw Andy as the yes man pre-anger management.
Yeah.
When Dwight was at Staples, Michael kind of sees that. Which is funny because he doesn't see it now. But agreed that having both of them and Angela removed from the fray...
some strong opinions.
Yeah, it does create a funnier dynamic between the two. Because nobody else seems to vote that strongly.
Right.
Yeah, they fall in line one way or the other, but nobody besides Oscar and Pam. Oscar and Pam is a funny duo to be going back and forth. Yeah,
they're the captains of these pickup teams. Mm-hmm. But like people seem to, as the episode goes on, they seem to be more entrenched.
Yes.
Especially Stanley, I feel like starts to have a bigger opinion. Mm-hmm. We see Stanley get involved. We see
Creed needs three
Phyllis
chairs
a little bit. Creed's got his own chair thing going on. But yes, it is it's a rare Oscar Pam showdown.
My mother's in a wheelchair. Well, he could still. Never mind.
Another fun sort of clash between Oscar and Pam is when Oscar begins to make the point about, we are a paper company. How can we put our paper in one of these in
our
this wretched
paper
machine?
Yeah.
And she says, "No, Oscar, this is not the time for one of your principled stances."
Yes, totally. Yep.
Guys, you're arguing over a 1 in 16 chance over a prize worth $40.
That's another time. Yeah. Pam's like, I got this great prize. And he's like, it's not a great prize.
Mm-hmm. I don't even want to give Pam credit because she's so, but this is a really good prize.
They clash a little bit, I guess, when they're helping Aaron with the crossword.
Oh, yeah.
Thing with Gabe or whatever they're playing, a Scrabble.
This happens again when Oscar, Angela, and Pam are talking, or Angela and Pam are talking about their babies. Oscar is talking about his dog, Gerald. And then Andy starts bringing up his boat. Unbelievable. That's a drop waiting to happen.
I know. I think I cut it. So I think I have it somewhere. It's just not in the board.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not in the box.
I also want to talk about Jim and Pam in this. Because what's interesting about this little rivalry that they have in this episode is that, first of all, it's all fun. I would say it's all fun. It doesn't feel the least bit like really dramatic. But this comes after the whole Pam art school story arc. So I guess it's just kind of nice to see them fighting or disagreeing. But it's all in good fun, and you know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think that's why, as Alex was saying at the beginning of this episode, that when you remove it from the rest of season 5, which does have all these extra subplots, Michael and Holly at the beginning of the season, and Pam at art school, and then the Michael Scott Paper Company later in the season, there's just a lot of big storylines, and in this episode, if you separate it from the rest of the season, the problem is very mundane. And that's why it feels so kind of true to the heart of the show. It's a very big, involved, comedic episode of television about a very small problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was very intentional. After Pam makes that first, like, of course, Jim, and kind of walks over and does that, this almost kiss of death to Jim of like, you better fall in line or there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Is then you just get that
and
quick
gets the shiver.
Shot of Jim going, whew.
Yeah.
And it does sort of set it that, oh, this is a game that is, I'll say it, erotic for both of them.
There, I do. It also gets set up.
I think this all plays out a little later in the bedroom. There you go. Do you ever think about it? I always think about what they look like.
Sorry. I also have one of them in the nude, but that's for me.
I'm glad that Alex brought up that moment, actually, because I love, I think there's a jump cut there between her, like, smooching him and then, like, smacking him on the shoulder and saying, okay. Like,
yeah,
and,
totally.
And there is a rhythm to this episode. I don't know if you guys felt that, but I had it just kind of on repeat a few times before starting to record. And, like, there's just a fabulous rhythm to the way, I mean, it feels very action-packed when everyone gets in Michael's ear and is trying to win him over. Like, that whole scene when Oscar and Jim are inviting him to lunch, or when Pam is, you know, calling him hot tie guy and stuff like that. I think the editing is really fabulous in this episode. So I just wanted to give that a shout.
I agree. I think even some of the looks of the camera aren't given as much time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
For example, mm-hmm. when Michael turns around to show Pam his pants,
yeah,
the way she gives a very quick look to the camera, the way Stanley looks
$9.
At the camera,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boys department,
boys department, yeah.
Or like, you know, I was thinking everyone sits on a chair, but not everyone sits on a copier or even uses a copier. Yeah, every day.
Yeah. She like, just like the, goes with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like the timing of that little, the rhythm of that little of scene. I just thought there were a lot of moments like that in this episode.
That's the same with the Stanley look at the camera.
Yeah.
It's the timing of it that is so funny and how quickly it is after this one.
Next summer.
Not much lumbar support.
Yeah.
had to put that on the drop board for, I think last week we talked, or a few weeks ago, that was someone's non-musical earworm.
Oh, that's...
I don't know when I'll use that again, but I will.
You know, you talk about the way that the quickness of this dialogue or the rhythm of it, the way that Meredith says, Jim, good for you, standing up to Pam, is kind of subtle. It's kind of like a voice of the audience a little bit, kind of sowing discord as this moment between the two of them. And it's a little different from Meredith get a divorce later on. Those kinds of moments. No. It's a quicker line.
Yeah.
I love that Creed gives him a look at that moment too. When she's like, good for you, standing up to Pam.
Yeah, he's tuned into what's going on. He does the thing when Pam's at art school when he comes up and gives Jim the shoulder rub.
Oh yeah.
You know? He knows what's going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Should we move to the Dwight, Angela, Andy storyline?
Yes, the C story.
Story. Okay.
No. Oh, behave, yeah. Sean. You're wrong.
This starts in the break room. Them discussing, kind of arguing over the contract for the Shroot Farms wedding. And then we travel to Shroot Farms. I love that Andy is kind of the mediator in this. He is the one.
What's going on here?
Dwight, can you slaughter the entrees the day before if we pay extra?
I'll consider it.
Darn!
Agreed. It is funny to watch Andy be the mediator between a Dwight and Angela conversation.
Yes,
two very strong opinions there, and Andy trying to come to some sort of agreement, while also being the money.
No kidding.
If we pay extra, that's his solution.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I was feeling Andy, by the way, on his talking head, because I'm in the throes of wedding planning myself now, and this, like, we looked at 12 venues. I put in 8 deposits, and I've seen Angela naked 0 times.
Yeah,
I don't have quite the same ratio going on, but I haven't put down deposits. I've never seen myself naked, but that's a different issue. Anyway.
Have you made the decision about the butter sculpture?
The ideas. Goat, by the way. Yeah. Everybody, like the amount of money Andy has blown on this is so funny. Like he's putting down these deposits and then it all ends up here. Schrute Farms, back in the barn. I can only imagine Dwight charges exorbitant fees.
Oh, yeah.
Upselling Andy like crazy throughout this.
He's also booked several honeymoons.
Yeah, yeah.
On top
of... I bet the honeymoons are for the Germans in that closed society. Yeah. Minutes from Schrute Farms.
As you continue your wedding planning, and you can cut this out if you want, whenever you're talking about something to be in the ceremony, like at the event, I just want you to imagine a butter sculpture of Walter standing amongst the crowd.
That's our cat.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and then you can let Walter lick the butter sculpture.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely leaving that in.
Yeah.
That's going nowhere.
But, of course...
we were looking for kitten.
I need more cat drops. It comes up enough.
But of course, we see, even though Angela is kind of taken in the moment, it all goes away when Dwight surprises her by telling
her literally taken in the moment.
Yeah, that they're now married.
Yes.
That Andy signed the marriage certificate as their witness.
The witness? Yeah. Yeah. In the eyes of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. It's official.
It's brilliant because... Once again, Dwight is his own worst enemy. He succeeded in convincing her to marry him instead.
Yes.
She was ready to say that. And then he was like, because he kind of tricked her and did it without her permission, he loses her again. Just like when things were really good between them during, you know, at the beginning of Fun Run. And then he had to lock her cat in a freezer.
It's like he ran an incredible touchdown run, and then got it pulled back for like taunting and celebrating at the end.
Yes.
Penalized.
Like, yeah, you throwing up middle fingers, and
you just had to put the ball down and walk away.
Yeah. Exactly.
Last week's episode was about Dwight and Michael, and we talked, you know, about Michael being this sort of pseudo mentor for Dwight. This is a very Michael-esque thing to do. Do everything right and then ruin it at the end.
Yep. I mean, to be fair, it's not totally Dwight's fault. He's been telling Angela to take German for years.
Yeah, yeah. Although later in the season, when Pam is fixing the copier or setting up the new copier, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. That Dwight is trying to help her by reading the German instructions, the mostly religious.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, with his mostly religious pre-industrial.
Ceremonial
sarcophagus. Yeah. I had a question. I was going to ask your opinion on this, Sean, but the set that they use for the barn with the lights and the minister, we don't see that again when we go to the finale and Angela and Dwight have their wedding. Do you think, like, I don't know, if you're going to create a set like that, would you feel any sort of, do you think there's any sort of need to try to bring it back? Later in the show, or I don't know.
Yeah, I bet that... I wonder if somebody in the art department said, you know, we did a wedding at Schrute Farms pretty much already with the pews and the lights and all that. I would imagine the set decorator being a little bit like... I think this wedding is a little bit... The set for this wedding is a little bit nicer than the one that they ended up going with. I feel like it's just a tent in a field.
The finale, they need a lot more room. There's a lot more people there. There's tons of stuff going on. Mm-hmm.
It would be a lot harder to get that shot of Moe's looking at a scarecrow.
Exactly. Yes. Well, that's why you have to put the whole wedding outside for that one joke.
Also, Dwight didn't have the graves dug. For this one,
right?
You know, like he didn't do it official. Obviously, he had a twine ring. Also, part of this to me is Dwight would, if he was going to throw a wedding for someone, it wouldn't be in the barn. I think he would do the tent thing because he wants this to be a moment he reveals it to Angela. Like he wants the moment where it's revealed and she sees it and her breath is taken away in a moment. And if you're doing a big tent, you know, you see that coming when you walk onto the property. It's not like it's a surprise. Mm-hmm. So. I think he did this all just to have this grand reveal.
That's a good point. This wedding is now tainted. This setup is now tainted because it made Angela mad. So she probably
a bad memory. Yeah. He's not doing that again. Yeah. Right.
She had to design it this time.
But wait, that's fair. That minister doesn't officiate their real wedding.
Because because he planned everything without her for that. So I'm sure that she had opinions about the real wedding.
Who officiates Dwight's wedding?
I don't think we know who it is.
I don't know. Kevin does the reading. Come my anointed one. Like there's like that,
Maybe that's all we really get.
Yeah.
before we dig ourselves any deeper.
I'm going to look it up as soon as we're done and we can figure out
for
if
sure.
We're keeping this in.
Yeah, it's staying in.
Another thing from this episode, Alex, you brought up the rule of threes earlier in this episode, wherein most jokes land in three parts. You've got the blah, the bop, and then there's the punchline. It's the third thing.
And the plop.
This is, to me, is an instance of, what did you say? Sorry.
Well, you were like, you got the bop, and the bop, and then the blah. I don't want to see. You got the bum, the bop, and the plop.
Okay.
Go ahead. We're cruising.
Andy stepping in manure in the kitchen, to me, is a famous example, or the most memorable example of me, of a joke that does not come in threes. That you've got you just got the one, and then in the kitchen.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Why is that in the kitchen?
Like, it feels like, on the way out of Shroot Farms, he should have tripped and gone, like, face first into one, like, all the way.
Yeah, you do get the Moe's throwing the football at his head.
Ball is.
I do think that's
ball.
That's the right kind of restraint, though. If you had Andy stepping in manure three times in one episode, it might have felt a little over the top.
Yeah. It's such a joke on its face on its own. It's just like guy steps in poop. You don't need to, like, it doesn't need the structure of threes to really deliver on its joke.
Something about it being in the kitchen feels like it jumps to the third.
That's right. Yep.
Before we move on to the conference room, what are your final thoughts on this episode? Any other favorite moments that you...
Yes, another editing thing. Just to also resolve the A storyline, the way they pop in, open the door, goes, "We'll go with the chairs," and it's really quick, and it's like we've spent this whole episode going back and forth, and the whole thing is resolved in like 14 seconds in this little scene. I'd rather have new chairs than nothing at all, and then it cuts on Michael going, "Mother," and then right to the fur coat shot. It's great.
A couple of little things. The joke about tiramisu, Michael finding the tiramisu in the trash.
Yes. Thank you.
I will admit that for the first few watches, or the first few times I saw this episode, I always just assumed that Michael had his own tiramisu that he brought back from the restaurant. But no, in fact, some people throwing out perfectly good tiramisu because it had a little bit of hair on it. But I think the illusion there is that he picked up Pam's tiramisu out of the trash.
Yes,
and that's what he's eating on the phone with David Wallace.
I think so.
Then the other piece.
I didn't never put that together.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I wonder if
when they come back in, Jim is the only one carrying leftovers.
Yeah, God. That's so funny. I always assume the same, that he has his own.
We've got Michael putting sugar in his Diet Cola or Diet Coke, whatever soda that is. And then just one moment from the episode that this particular episode of this podcast, you were talking about being in this episode in season 5 and cruising for a bruising, and now we are your cruise director. You didn't say it at the time, and I had to say it now. It's like, I feel like Andy. Sweet 401. It's one of those moments.
Shout out to Hank, by the way. Making use of his time. Change in Hank when he gets up. Nice and warm up here. Take as many as you want. And there's a moment when he realizes what's going on, and he just relaxes.
Yeah.
In a way that we haven't seen Hank all show. And the way he takes his time, and he knows about copiers, like he knows where to look. He's like, you should see some of these new models. And then the not much lumbar support line. It's just a really nice use of Hank. And I enjoy how much he relishes the decision, even though he doesn't make one.
I could not sit all day in this chair.
Last one of the funnier Big Tuna moments in the show. Andy takes a bite of a tuna sandwich.
Yes.
Oh, Angela comes over and kisses him while he's eating the tuna sandwich.
I, rewatching this as that happened, I was like, oh, I don't, why are the tuna sandwich thing? And then the kiss happens, and you're like, oh, Angela is not even concerned about kissing Andy in that moment. She's just purely sending the message to Dwight, and that's how they hammer it home.
So on Dunderpedia, there is a mention of that in an interview, during the season four, here's what's written here. Andy takes a bite out of the tuna sandwich just before Angela walks up to him and kisses him. During the season four finale, Dwight and Angela had an intimate scene. Angela complained in an interview that Rainn Wilson had eaten a tuna sandwich before the scene, and because she was pregnant and extra sensitive to smell, she had a hard time kissing Rain.
Oh, God.
So,
Come on, Rain.
Makes sense.
Sure. You got a kissing scene that day. No fish.
That's a real life moment that they ended up writing back into
Brilliant.
The show.
That's so good. Oh.
I mean, there isn't a link to this interview, so it's just something that somebody wrote on this website.
Sure.
So take it with a grain of salt or, the sugar that Michael puts in his Diet Coke. But yeah.
Take it with a spoonful of sugar. I do like at the fur coat talking head at the end. He starts it by saying, what did we learn this week? Well, one, thanks to me, it made me think that the documentary crew every week is doing a recap with Michael at the very end of the week of what did you learn this week? I really enjoyed that. And then what a way to close the episode. A great little close with Jim coming back for the copier joke with the same kiss, same energy. I'm going to need four after the totally kidding line. Just well played. Perfect. Good job all around.
This is just a really solid episode.
It really is.
Really. It's in the running for if you could, someone who'd never seen The Office, you get to show them one episode. This is up there.
Yeah.
This is up there. You got to get everything.
You only.
Not enough classic Dwight for me, but it's in the running.
That's true.
Yeah.
Good point. You'll have to explain the backstory.
The beehive. That one. That's one of those forever. I've always thought the line was walk until you hear the bees, but it's beehive. And I had one of those okay. I guess it's that. And by the way, Nana Mimi cannot squat over some trench.
Well, Nana Mimi.
Shall we?
Let's move on.
Let's move on to the conference room.
Moving on. Season 9, episode 16.
Yes. There we go.
Got a new one. All right.
Okay, everybody, listen up. If you are not in that conference room in 2 minutes, I am going to kill you.
So before we start the conference room this week, we wanted to mention that as of this recording, Marcus York, the actor who played Billy Merchant in The Office, has passed away as of today. So just a quick RIP for Billy Merchant. I think a fan favorite character for us. We did an episode on him.
Yeah. Raisin went up here for Marcus York and Billy Merchant. No one has ever dealt with Michael Scott.
Yeah, so well.
Better than him. Let's listen to it one more time.
Let me stop you right there.
Okay.
And leave.
Perfect.
Well played.
Love you. Love you, Marcus.
Goodbye, Marcus. We'll miss you.
But today for the conference room, because we're covering the surplus, we're going to be picking sides. Since in this episode, the employees of Dunder Mifflin Scranton pick sides on chairs or copiers.
I'll take Roni X.
Huh?
Sorry.
What was that?
I said, I'll take Roni X.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yes. I got one.
I just think membership's a little low, so for the numbers.
Wow.
Oh! Kidding. See, I took both sides. Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead.
You're out. We're kicking you out. I think the first one we had was something that we've been meaning to talk about, which is subtitles or no subtitles.
One thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, do it.
All right. So, and I, the we share a Peacock account, the three of us, and for this show and watching The Office to prep and everything like that. And one thing that I have noticed is I am a subtitles on person. So I love to have the subtitles. And I notice that every now and then the subtitles are off when I, you know, go back to watch The Office. And it makes me wonder if between the three of us, we are alternating turning them on and off to fit our preferences. So
I will say subtitles
or no subtitles.
I will say that I am a subtitles on person. So it is not me turning them off.
I am a firm no subtitles guy.
Yeah.
But only with comedies. If it's a drama, I'll turn those suckers on. Mm-hmm. But if it's supposed to be funny,
because
I don't want the subtitles around because I read the joke before I hear it sometimes, and that's not how it was intended, and I don't like it. Now, with The Office for research, sometimes I got to have the subtitles on. I want to know exactly what the word was. I want to know exactly what they said. But that's the only time I turn them on, and then I turn them right back off. But now that I know that you guys like them on, I'm going to leave them on.
Okay.
They're going to stay on.
Thanks, buddy.
I see where you're coming from, but really with comedy, it never bothers me that much, even when I read it before it happens on screen.
Yeah.
I had a moment not that long ago, I don't know, a year or two ago, where I was like, man, if it were up to me, I'd always have the subtitles on. Well, it's like, well, it is kind of up to me. We're all watching at home on TV and on our laptops and stuff. So it's a very, very easy fix to make. But
so my partner, Anne, likes subtitles. She has them on whenever possible. Mm-hmm. But we were watching a stand-up special, and I was like, I'm not watching if there's subtitles on a stand-up special.
Sure. It's that's like, that's kind of fair.
You just can't do that.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's fair. You surprise. I get that.
I mean, typically with a stand-up special, too, it's like they're like shouting the whole time. So, you know, it's a little
Or like
clearer.
The finale of a reality TV show where they're about to announce the winner and they have it on the text is on screen first. Like that could be a moment. Yeah. Best picture goes to...
That's two.
Yeah. La La Land. Yeah.
Sorry, it was La La Land, right? Yeah. Then it wasn't.
It wasn't. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
Before we move on to some of the others, team copy or team chairs?
Oh, I would be team chairs. There's not.
Oh yeah.
You just get to enjoy the chair all day, every day. I 100% agree with Pam.
Bad chair can lead to bad health things if you're sitting for that much of your life.
Mm-hmm.
A good chair is worth the money.
There's one thing that I feel like you need for extra context. Does the stuff that they use on the copier, does that go out to clients? That would be my only caveat.
It must.
Like if it's external facing, then man, you can't put your best foot forward with a bad machine like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for the sake of argument in this, I'll go team copier.
All right. Well, 2-1. We're getting chairs. Yeah.
Very well. Very well.
Well, let's do it.
It's just kind of like it's a protest vote.
Yeah, it's just purely even the numbers. Yeah.
There were a couple others that we were talking about. Are you guys a
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Before I moved on, I really wanted to plug the stand-up special because it's very, very good. Oh. And I feel like no one talks about it. It's on HBO. It's by Julio Torres. It's called My Favorite Shapes.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If you haven't
seen
it, there's just like nothing like it. It's so good.
It's one of the
most original like comedy specials. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I'll check it out. Very good.
Sitting on my copier.
How about chunky or creamy peanut butter?
Ugh.
Chunky, and I won't hear any other answer.
Creamy, and you just did. Tie breaking vote.
I think crunchy is unequivocally the right answer. Go ahead, Sean.
And I vote the same, chunky.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chunks. We just got to figure out like what chunky's deal is.
Three hole punch, Jim, or Roy trying to punch Jim.
Very good. Very good.
Very good. I'm going to go Roy trying to punch Jim. It's much more interesting.
I'm going to go three hole punch Jim. It's very classic Office.
It's very not violent.
Yeah. Yeah, the gym in the moment right before he's being attacked.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Jim. Roy trying to punch Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of all the comedy that it leads to. It's a very dramatic scene, but hilarity ensues, of course.
I am taking Bookface over Facebook.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Bookface over Dave, for sure.
For our last one, we'll do Recyclops or Belschnickel.
Give me Recyclops. Ooh. Short but memorable. That's what she said.
Oh my God.
Nice. Only shows up once a year. It's short and memorable. Yeah. And has gotten much, much more sinister over time.
Yeah. Politicorn wishes. Yeah.
I'm going to take Belschnickel because I might get out of there with a nice wooden bowl. Oh, wait. No, you don't get to keep the bowl.
You don't get to keep the bowl.
I might get out of there with a face full of dirt.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Belschnickel. Sorry. I'm going Recyclops.
There you go.
What?
Yes.
He's gonna throw.
That was
all
a really good
around.
Example of recycling your vote.
Recyclops. Belschnickel is kind of a racist, so I'm gonna stick with Cyclops.
Well, Recyclops is destroying the Earth.
Yeah, but
kill. That's what it says on his.
See,
nameplate.
He sees all races equally, at least though. I mean.
He's going to throw all your papers around and Belschnickel's going to feed you. Mm-hmm.
I know that you said those were the last three, but I came up with a couple others very quick. We don't have to be.
Yeah, let's do
Michael Klump versus or Blind Guy McSqueezy.
Oh, Klump.
Klump all day.
I'm going to go Blind Guy McSqueezy. Sure. Okay.
Imagine if he combined them.
Whoa.
Just imagine Michael in the sumo suit falling eyes first into a vat of acid.
At improv class. Yeah. In that
if
suit.
Only I'd worn the safety mittens. Yeah. Okay. Date Mike versus Prison Mike.
Oh. Ooh, Prison Mike.
Date Mike.
I'm Date Mike, too. Nice to meet me.
Yeah. Wow. Nice to meet me. What's funny is they're both wearing backwards headwear.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And then the last one, Team Dunder or Team Mifflin?
I'll take Mifflin.
I'll take Dunder.
Yeah,
we actually meet him.
Yeah, I'll take Dunder as well. For no,
I started this company in 1949. Wow. Back then it was an industrial supplier of metal brackets, mostly, for construction.
Oh, boy.
And then Mifflin. Of course, he killed himself later. But I knew Mifflin through the Rotary Club.
Great.
He was at dinner with Beverly. And her husband, what was his name? Jerry. Jerry Trupiano from South Jersey. And he was tall. Both he and Mifflin were tall guys.
Right.
I never thought I would ever play that whole drop.
Yeah.
At 45 seconds, just blows away all my other drops in duration.
Perfect. Perfect and just
tall. Wow. They were tall guys.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Dunder. That's
Jerry
Dunder
at the
talking.
Club from Jersey.
Yeah. Dunder.
So accurate. Good conference room.
Yeah.
We did it.
Is that it? Or do we need
That was the last
trivia?
Of my the ones that I came up with in addition to our our working list.
Sick.
There is a limitless supply, a lifetime supply. You know what I was thinking? This would be a really fun Instagram poll where you can do this or that.
Mm.
Nice.
We can put that up.
And
let's do it.
I think in each one we'll do that. You know, you have to make a decision as one listener held us to. you must give me an answer.
Yeah.
No cop-outs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for today. We ran out of time for trivia this week. But, of course, please keep the trivia coming. We always appreciate that. Email us mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. you can give us a call 503-694-9314 and leave us a message. We love to play the voicemails on the show. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/michaelscott. You can join us for $5 a month and become a Scott's Tot. Every month, you get a bonus mailbag episode where we answer all the questions from our Patreon supporters. And together, we make a donation to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. So special thanks to all our Patreon members, our Scott's Tots. We love you guys so much. Without you, this would not still be going on. So pat yourselves on the back and thank you so much for your support. And special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps us with our social media and designs our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon over video chat.
A quick thank you to Caitlin, who sent us the news about Marcus York to let us know. I didn't have it in front of me before, but thank you again. And to all of you, thank you for listening. We truly appreciate it. We love that you guys will hang out with us, spend a little time with us. For our Patreon subscribers, I think I said this last week as well, but we'll have this month's episode coming out very soon if it's not out already. But thank you again to everyone. You're the reason we stay in the paper business. So take care, stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the song.
Yes, sir.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.